Think about this. I've seen at a Weight Watchers convention, and this was so funny, I had to watch it, but I could, and I wasn't supposed to be there. I was teaching my course in the next room. I'd given him an exercise, but so I didn't laugh so hard. I actually took my jacket and shoved it over my face outside the door. I have never heard an induction to eat wantonly and to get fat more profoundly done by this one person who is one of the leaders of Weight Watchers. And I can understand why that person watches weight, because there was a lot of it to look at. Well, if she did this induction on the audience, I know she must do it on herself, right? She said, and she said, like, for example, it was just, I know it was, I don't know, maybe 45 minutes before lunch when this woman started to talk. And she said, "I know I'm the last speaker before lunch, and you're all getting so hungry." That was the first line out of her mouth, right? Now, this is because she didn't take into account the effect of communication. Only her pictures in her head, her voices in her head, that told her what was important. So she went inside, the voice said, "Oh, I bet they're all getting hungry." And the picture said, "Well, I can reassure them, you know, that this will be a good experience, because you're going to have to starve off being hungry every moment of every day for the rest of your life." Jesus criminy, right? I was hungry. I'm hungry now, even talking about it. Hungry, 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 right? You know, I went and got a sandwich and listened. This was only the beginning. This woman could describe hunger in ways I'd never even heard of. When she started talking about little particles on your tongues that pulsated, right, and created sensations of flavors where pictures would fly into your mind. I mean, it was wild. I was sitting there thinking of everything I'd ever eaten in my life, right, laughing because she was doing exactly what she didn't want to do. She didn't walk up. See, when I was 23 years old, I want you to think of 23 years old, hair down to here. I'm walking into manager's clinic to show them how to work with psychiatric patients. And people were going, and you know what? Within minutes, there was no problem. I mean, when they picked me up at the plane, they kept trying to push me aside. They were holding up the Bandler sign, and I kept going, they go, "Get out of the way, kid. We're waiting for the real guy." And I, you know, if I didn't have ID, I'd have never gotten in the car. They go, no. Bandler's an old guy. So he wrote this book, right? Works with patients, and it's you? Uh-oh, because I used to sit there, too. Only I sat there with a gun. Slightly different. One of the few people I know that brought a gun to college. It made all the arguments a lot easier. See, I used to take the primers in there, take the bullets out, right? Stick them into hot wax. See, just the primer and the wax. Right? It works really good, you know. And when the teachers bother me, I go, poof! It's an automated spit wad. Won't hurt them. But it'll leave a good welt. Because they'd come from Harvard, and they'd come up there, and they'd look up down your nose at you, and they'd go, "Today, class, we're going to discuss something perhaps you will not understand." And I'd think, that's your fucking job, not mine. You know, what do you think I came here for? I came here to not understand? Well, I can do that. Every time you turn your nose up, there you go. "Mr. Bandler, I suppose you think that's funny." And I go, "The next one's a real bullet. You willing to risk it?" "You know, this gauntle thing isn't done at Harvard." And I said, "Well, I can't afford to go to Harvard, and you couldn't get a real job." Now, the trick is, in the course of the next week, is to begin to learn to monitor yourself via the outside. Because if you try to look at pictures and talk about them, there will be a lot of spaces. Now, worse yet, if you try to say sentences before you speak them, there'll be gaps in everyone's experience. People ask you questions. Come back out, but in the audience is going to be hitting you with spit wads. We'll see to that. You see, downtime is useful when you're not up. But when you're here, you need to learn to accelerate yourself so that you can see each and every movement in a room. And I don't care how many people are there, it'll tell you whether or not you have their attention. And if their attention breaks from you, just look at them. You'll train an audience in a moment of time. such that everything that occurs, you stop and you look at them. And in the first, by the end of the first morning, every time people go to move, they'll go. Something in their body will go, it's okay. But they'll know that your attention is very focused. Now, this state of consciousness requires that you get rid of certain bullshit. Okay? Now, the bullshit that's inside of you is not something that's based on psychiatric nonsense. It's just based on the fact you went to school, most of you. And when you went to school, or worse yet, you went to public speaking lessons. All right. By the way, that's the worst grade I ever got in school was public speaking. Right. The other was psychology 1A. That's God's truth. Other than that, I did well. Turns out, psych 1A, I went back, challenged my grade because I was right. They've never found that. I can fix the clients. They can't. Right. Public speaking, that guy had a nervous breakdown and is in a mental hospital. I wouldn't be that cruel, would I? Yep. Plus, I had help. Because he was from Harvard. And there are right ways of doing things and wrong ways. And Mr. Bandler, you're a demonstration of all the wrong things on this planet. And I kicked him in the balls as hard as I could. Said, yee-haw, guess you're right. I'll think it over. You do the same. See, to me, what he was doing wasn't teaching me. I said, demonstrate me how to have an impact on people. The impact he had on people, I didn't want to. I didn't want to be better than them. After all, as a guy from India one time walked up to me and told me he'd spent his whole life worrying about whether he was in meta-complementary position, you know, that Bates and stuff, where you're either one up or one down or one sideways. I can never quite remember where everything's supposed to go because I don't ask that question. It's not a question of if you're one up or one down. The question is, are you having fun? Because when you're having fun, you are learning. And when audiences are in unison, somebody once said to me, I said, because I'll tell you, who's having fun in a math class? The one that's exhilarated by it. Now, maybe the teacher can only teach five of them, because you have to have a pocket protector and horn rimmed glasses, or be like me and think numbers are magic. Because you see, I understood that Pythagoras was not like a mathematician. He was a sorcerer. He was. He would come into town and walk up, and he'd tell people how tall buildings were without measuring them and take their daughters. Yeah, this is true. I'm not making this up. You don't have to. History's too cool. I got news for you. After you teach for a while, you don't have to make up anything. The stuff that comes is too much better. I couldn't make up stuff like audiences do. I mean, I bring up this beautiful blonde woman right out of the audience. Couldn't help it. Dallas, man, every time she moved, the diamonds on her flashed from the lights. So finally, I brought her up. I was demonstrating anchoring. Right. Part of the way through, this nerd in the front row says to me, because he goes, isn't this woman a plant? And I stepped back and I looked at her and I said, if you find me a store in Dallas that grows plants like this, I said, I'm driving home in a truck. Now, you can't pay people to say stuff like that. If their minds don't think it through. You know why he thought she was a plant? It's because when I whispered stuff in her ear, I touched her. Then I went and whispered something else in her ear and touched her. Now, this is, by the way, a hypnosis workshop. And he says, well, isn't this touching thing working because you gave her suggestions? And I said, well, here's the two possibilities. One, it either works because of timing. Or two, it works because of post-hypnotic suggestion. Now, it seems like either one would be good for a hypnotist. And I said, too many years of college? The guy looked at me and goes, well, I have three PhDs. And I said, obviously, sequentially. I got two in one day. I did. I went to this place, I gave a lecture, and they gave me two PhDs. Not a bad deal, huh? Them Europeans, they're so funny. Actually, one was a doctorate of letters, but they didn't tell me whether those are PhDs or what the letters are for it, nor do I care. I just use the reverse side for telephone numbers. That's my theory of education. Far too much education is a dangerous thing. Because what happens is people start to believe their pictures more than their experience. And then the result is they actually do things that don't work and defend them rather than realize. Psychiatrists used to have the highest suicide rate. They don't anymore. You know why? Because they have things they can do now besides give drugs. They still have a good suicide rate. Dentists then became the next highest. Right? Now it's no longer dentists. Pretty soon it's going to be politicians, and I'll be happy. This guy claps his hands. Can you believe these people? If I hear any more about this fucking Bosnia, don't blow up the innocent people on the ground. We learned from Bush. Lob the bomb in the president's window. It worked. It worked in two wars. Lob the bomb in the president's window. The president of the Serbs, right up the driveway, bomb in the window, war end. It's a formula. We found out it works. Stick to it. But, you know, I know you guys didn't vote for this guy, but let me tell you, neither did I. This rube we have as a president down there. I mean, we've had some bad presidents running our country, but this guy is on TV every day. I don't think he's been to the White House. I swear, even up here, I turned it on and he was on television. What, does this guy live in a studio or something? Every time I turn it on, he's on there. And every time I turn it on, his hair is different. What, is he like Dolly Parton? Got 300 of them? He thinks this is a show. He just does what the wife tells him. And obviously, if he doesn't, he's in big trouble. He ends up with scratches on his face. Isn't that awful? That's embarrassing. I voted no this time because I don't want to encourage them. I think if we keep voting for presidents, they'll keep having them. And I think if we keep letting people who teach not make it so people can do. See, my course is one of the things I insist on. That's why I make people do things. I have witnessed, although I didn't stay the whole day, I did check over and over again, people who taught for 9 hours from morning till night and never had people do one thing. No exercises, just information. Painful, isn't it? Right? People writing. They had writer's cramp for taking notes. My policy is, this is what you need to remember for tomorrow. Bring a videotape with your name on it. Now, unlike most courses, you can bring a tape recorder to this if you want. But if I find anybody in the room with a cassette package with the cellophane still on it, I will kill you. Just, you can buy as many cassettes as you want. Take the cellophane off ahead of time. Because it's that cellophane sound. You'll become familiar with it as you start teaching. You'll see them start to bend over, and you know they're either going to give themselves a blowjob or get a cassette. One or the other. And, you know, it just never turns out to be the blowjob. You can hear the cellophane wrinkling down there. Like they haven't got the brains to go ahead and open it up ahead of time. Now, the thing is if you let them do that, what happens is when they open the next one, you'll have an alert audience. But you were doing trance last time. And they'll crankle that cellophane and everybody in the room will do this. You'll wake them back up and then the one over here starts doing it. And they go back down. And then you wake them back up and the one over here starts doing it. You see, all this stuff about anchoring becomes amplified by the group. The bigger the group, the more anchors work. And that's what makes it easy. However, the whole game is also reversed. Because you don't pace everybody. That would be kind of hard, wouldn't it? Besides, this pacing thing is overrated anyway. Remember, it was pace then lead. It wasn't pace for a week or two. That's W-E-A-K. Weaker and weaker. I hear all this stuff about rapport, rapport, rapport. It was rapport, lead. Okay? Because you see, the way we do it here is with something that we know that everybody here shares in common. You all have to breathe. And as long as I can control the tempo of my voice, I can control your breathing. So I get you guys to go at a pace. Now, we're going to use a lot of music. I know I use it while I teach now out loud, but I've always used it on the inside to keep the tempo. That's all that goes on inside of me. Even when it's silent, this continues. Because it gives me a way of keeping my meter even, and also of chunking information so that it goes in sizes, so that it goes around, and at a certain point, just like this loop here, it has a beginning. Because people, in order to understand information, you need to chunk it into certain pieces. Now, it doesn't mean you have to know what these are ahead of time. You just have to hear it when it comes. Now, we have some things we're going to install inside you, but I wanted to start sort of this evening by having you do a few things to prime each other up. Now, have any of you in here not been in an NLP course before? It's all right. Don't worry. If you haven't been in any NLP course, it's fine. Some people here are here to teach NLP, and some just want to learn to teach better. I don't want you people in the same group. Do you understand? Go to another group, and that way you will be a lot less confused. And when we do the exercise we're about to do, don't go first. Okay, because everything we're going to do is real simple. You'll pick it up just like this. It's stuff, but I don't want to have to explain it all over again because it's simple stuff. What we want to do is we want to begin to build a state of consciousness which purposes for you to teach on a stage. It's not for dating, okay? It's not for talking to your children. I don't want you to stay in it all the time. I want you to be able to just go zip and go into it. And in the course of the next 8 days, we're going to keep building that state more and more and more. Now, it seems to me that you need certain basic elements in order to be able to be a good trainer. Now, there are some people who are very entertaining, and there are some people who are not very entertaining. Out of the class of people who are entertaining, some of them are good trainers. Out of the other class, none of them are. Because if you can't make people feel good when they reaccess what you teach them, they'll feel the way they felt when you taught them. This is what teachers don't understand. That's why half the people in the U.S., well, more than half, but at least three quarters in the U.S., and at least half in other countries, all you have to do is go up and write a polynomial on a blackboard. It doesn't even have to relate to anything, and they get ill. I mean, you just go, you know, x to the third power, you know, is the square root of the, and you write it up there. They don't even relate to anything. You can look out in the audience, and they'll be going, now, who did this to them? This isn't their fault. This was done to them because people made learning so unpleasant. How many of you in the course of school were taught to have stage fright? Here you are. You're in a public speaking course, right? Now, I got to admit, that shows balls. Well, it does. To come here when you're afraid to get on a stage? I mean, that's somebody that's, you know, that's like walking across hot coals, only it has a use. It's kind of the same thing. You overcome your fears. Only we're not going to overcome them here. I'm going to teach you to dive right in and make them go away because they're not real. But first, we're going to use them a little bit. Because think about it. If you learn to be afraid, okay, all right, as you're sitting here, because if I were to ask you to come up on the stage, you could get scared, couldn't you? You remember those of you who had your hand up? Think about the ones that didn't raise their hand. Yeah, I like that. Let's go. Are any of you have stage fright? Oh, yeah, I do. It's the one that went, that's the one that's got stage fright. See, I've done this before, and none of you will escape. The trick is not to bring you up and have you be terrified, right? The trick is to get you to be able to laugh at what's going on so you can go on. This is the essence of all human learning. When you go and you call your house, when your telephone number's been changed, right? You got a new phone number, right? You call the old number. You go, oh, fuck it, son of a bitch. Then you go back, you get to do it again, right? It's not till you start laughing that you start dialing the new number. As soon as you go to dial it, you go, ha, 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 then you dial the new number. Well, you guys have a number which you run, but it isn't connected with the stage. It's before you even get there, isn't it? Because some of you are doing it already. They're inside going, that's what I've got to shut him in. Boom, boom, make it. Oh! You know. It's great from my point of view, you know, because I go, like, if I were to ask you to come up here, Marcus, how would you scare yourself? Ah! That's right. That's exactly how you do it. Now, what did you do? Me? Yeah, but even before you met me, you could do this. Yeah, you had some good practice. But I mean, like, what did you do? Like, if you thought about going and talking to an audience, I mean, how'd you scare yourself? That's good. But the question is, were words coming out of your mouth? See, we don't want thoughts in your head. We want you to know what you're... See, my theory is if you don't know what you're talking about, you shouldn't be up there in the first place. So if you know the material, you have a built-in device inside of your head. It's a generative language machine. It's the basis of all NLP. Right? Here's a machine that will generate infinite syntax. It's built in. It requires no forethought. You just turn it on, and if you know what you're talking about, it'll be there. Now, it can be organized somewhat better or later, but you see, if you listen to yourself talk, if you say the wrong thing, you can correct yourself. And it makes a lot more sense than if you're like this. I had a professor who came in and said, "Today, I want to tell you about..." Because I can remember people like clawing the desk in this class. "Yes!" And he'd go, "The helix molecule and..." And I mean, I swear to God, it was so painful. Right? You know, it was just awful because this guy had to get all the pictures lined up. And then when he felt okay, he'd say one word. Right? And then he thought he gave a very clear, concise lecture. And he had no fucking idea what was going on because it was going on inside his head. He was in there. He had a picture of the audience, too. It wasn't the one out here. Why fool around, you know? He even heard applause that weren't there.